My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are extremely caring, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
Now, Jonah, I was thinking about when we were kids and we used to go on vacations to this very specific place in Florida called Palm Island. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I feel like we went there a bunch of times, but I was like a kid, so I know it was in Florida, but I don't know exactly where it was. I just remember like hanging out there, like playing pool, eating a lot of French fries. But I don't remember a ton of details. What do you remember?
I remember that it was an island that you had to take a ferry to it. So
right.
According to our dad, we flew into Sarasota and then we took a ferry to this island. There was like very few things on the island. There was a general store. There was a restaurant that was really good that I would always get salads with shrimp on them. I remember that. And I think we've like already established that most of my memories are food related and you don't remember any of the food stuff. But I asked our dad because I was like, why did we get to keep going there? There was some tie-in with our grandpa. And our dad said, like he invested in it and that's why we got to go there. And one of the things that I remember being the most thrilling about going there, and I promise that you don't remember this, is that we would get this list before we would go of all these snacks. And we could fill out which snacks we wanted to be in the condo when we got there. And then we would show up day one. We got cupboards full of Pringles, you know, pretzels, Pop-Tarts. It was stuff that our mom didn't normally let us have in our house. But we'd show up in that Palm Island condo with a stocked fridge, stocked cabinets. And honestly, I can't think of anything more fun than that. Still, to this day.
It sounds so fun. I don't remember that at all. I literally yeah. just don't remember it. I do remember going to like a party. We took some friends down there one year, I remember.
Yes, you took Kevin Piper. I took Chrissy Zaytrak.
Yeah, and I had another couple friends from my high school who for some reason were at this same island. This guy had like his own, we were like 15 or something, and this guy somehow had his own apartment. I don't know, his parents weren't there. This kid who was also in like eighth grade with me, and like everyone was drinking, like smoking cigarettes, like the ashtrays were overflowing, and it was like just insane to me.
Yeah, Hunter, right? He would bring Chad and you guys would party. This is the first time hearing of this because Chrissy and I were just like kind of going to the tennis courts, going to the general store. I don't remember any kind of partying happening in Palm Island. The only kind of partying I remember happening in Palm Island is one time we went and Palm Island had been like temporarily kind of destroyed by a hurricane. And so we got to Sarasota and we weren't able to take the ferry there for a couple days.
Okay.
So, and I asked our dad about this. We stayed at this hotel owned by football player Ron Jaworski, otherwise known as Jaws, who's a retired Eagles quarterback. And I remember like we stayed at this hotel and the restaurant there was called Jaws or something. And I remember getting so much pie. They just because it was like the food, we had like a waiver for our free food. We stayed at the hotel. To me, that's the other thing that's really fun is like your flight gets bumped or your whatever gets happened. And you get to stay at a hotel for free and get, you have like a amount of a stipend for food. That is so fun.
That is fun. I have to say, I don't think that's a thing anymore. I think the airlines have gotten so cheap and figured out ways around all that stuff that I think that's a bygone.
Yeah.
Bygone experience. And the last thing, speaking of airports, is we had a celebrity sighting at Sarasota Airport on one of these trips to Palm
yes.
Island.
Yes.
And this was incredible because my mom literally, we're walking through the airport and she sighted this celebrity from behind.
Yes.
From the back of the head. She literally was like, I think that's Paul Simon. And like went up and was like, hi, Paul. And he was like, hey.
I remember he was wearing glasses with a daisy chain, like a beaded daisy chain. Like on them. And yeah, she just went up to him and said, hey, Paul. Now, Jonah, do you remember that years later, we were at a, do you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah, we were at a Yankees game.
With Lawrence tickets.
Lawrence tickets. And we ran into Paul Simon. And I believe he said he was a fan of yours. Is that true?
Well, we talked about, I was on SNL at the time. And we were about to start a new season. He was like, it looks like there's some great new, like, talent you guys are getting. Like, we just had like a casual conversation and I feel like you were so freaked out.
Yeah, I was just kind of standing there like I was pretty freaked out, but yeah. You know,
but whatever, we've had a couple run-ins with Paul Simon. It's not a big deal. Now,
what is a big deal, really good segue, is today's guest is a writer, producer, and television personality who gained national attention as a runner-up in MTV's Wanna Be a VJ contest in 1998. Soon afterwards, he became a VJ on the channel and hosted popular shows such as 120 Minutes. These days, he's an editor-at-large at Esquire, the author of the nonfiction book Party of One, A Memoir in 21 Songs, and the host of the popular podcast Homophilia and Waiting for Impact, a Dave Holmes passion project. Let's give it up for this honorary member of the East Coast family, Dave Holmes.
Hey, hello.
Hey.
Yes.
Dave, you've done so much stuff that it's hard to get it all in there.
Hey, well, thank you so much. That was beautiful. I'm so happy to be here. And I love that story. I really buy you guys as siblings. You've got that something.
Did you have like a place like that that you would go on vacation to when you were a kid, like multiple times?
Yeah, we went to Breckenridge in Colorado every Christmas.
Oh.
To go skiing.
Oh my God. Your family is the opposite of ours.
Yeah. I don't know. We certainly, our snack experience was directly opposite of yours. We would rent condos, but they would just, you know, the cupboard would be bare. But that wouldn't matter.
Would your parents ski?
They would, yeah. Oh, not super well.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really start this until they were like well into their 50s, probably.
Okay.
They started having kids late and then they had me way later. I was like a surprise kid, like 8 years after my middle sibling. And then we started maybe when I was like 8 or 9. And I do remember I was on a ski lift with my middle brother and my parents were taking a ski class. And we spotted our dad and we were like, oh, we should say hi. And as we like hovered over him, we heard him say, there's so much to remember. And we're like, let's not say hi to dad. Like, we will kill dad if we say hello. And he was like fully snow plowing down the bunny slope. They would give it a whirl, but they, you know, yeah, no, not a ton. It was more about, you know, hanging out, relaxing.
Right.
Were you ever snowboarding at all or were you more kind of a skiing?
I never did. I tried snowboarding later in life. Up in Hunter when I lived in New York, and it was a disaster. I just can't, like, if you grow up skiing, it's very hard to, and I don't skateboard or anything like that. So it was very hard to make my body do that thing. And I remember I took a class and I didn't have snow pants. I borrowed a friend's dad's snow pants and they were way too big. And I was in this little class and it was like, the slope was so, like, I'd done a green slope a couple times and done okay. But then I was like, I should probably do a class. And it was like the grade was so slight that you couldn't get any momentum going. So it was just constantly falling and I couldn't get up. And it was just like the kids who were in my like snowboarding class, like going down well, and then getting on the lift and going back up and going down again while I'm like red faced and struggling to get up, and snow is in the crack of my ass because my snow pants are size 40. and they began to, because they were teenagers, this was like in 1999, 2000, they began to recognize me. So they were like over my head as I'm struggling to get up. They're like, are you Dave Holmes? And it's like, yes! Yeah, it was really bad. So I have like, I have a block now with snowboarding, but I would ski again in a heartbeat.
Oh man. Snowboarding to me, I mean, in the 90s, I felt like I always wanted to do it because a lot of like teen magazines and stuff would like show like teenage girls with like bright pink hats and like snowsuits, but like the actual sport of it felt very intimidating. So I never really followed through with that. But we did have in Ohio, there's this ski quote unquote resort called Boston Mills Brandywine. And there was a big thing in our middle school. I guess it was middle school. It was like going on this bus and you would go to ski. And Jonah did very well. Jonah's much more athletic than I am. I remember one time I went on kind of a high. I progressed very slowly. I always hated skiing. I did it for like two or three winters. I signed up for this thing because I wanted, because all my friends were doing it. And I literally remember one time skiing down a hill and I basically just completely lost control and kind of gave up and was like, okay, I guess I'm just going to like fall at the bottom or whatever. And I knocked this girl down who was talking to her, like not violently, but I knocked her down who was talking to her grandpa or something. And so we both fell down, and then he was like standing over me going like, you shouldn't do that. And I was like, yeah, I know I shouldn't, Gramps. Yeah. I didn't try and like hit your granddaughter. Now get the fuck out of my
face. Get the fuck out of my face and let me enjoy. Does your mother typically see celebrities?
Our parents are kind of surprisingly like bold about talking to celebrities. So I will say, like, my first or second season, Paul McCartney was the musical guest on SNL. And my parents and Jonah came to like the dress rehearsal shows and the live show. So that, because at the dress rehearsal show, they could like go onto the floor and watch Paul McCartney. And there was like almost nobody there. So it was like so cool. But I took them to during the dress rehearsal show, I took them to like the backstage area, kind of by the wardrobe area, to like wait to go on stage to watch him. And that's where he was waiting to go on stage, Paul McCartney. My dad goes, hey, Paul. I guess they both said hey, Paul to different Pauls at different times in their life. My dad goes, hey, Paul. And he like goes to shake his hand. And my mom was losing her mind. I mean, this whole show, it was watching my mom revert to being 15 or something. It was like incredible. Yeah. And he goes, hey. And I go, these are my parents. And he was so nice to them. And he goes, like, he was like putting them at ease. He goes like, I'm doing a sketch with your daughter. And my parents were like, great. You know, like, and it was truly, I have to say, it is like one of the most incredible moments there, especially because after all of the like, just my parents just having to deal with so many different things with raising me, it felt like such a great way to thank them was to be like, here's Paul McCartney and you guys can talk.
Yeah, I love that.
And then watching I don't know if you remember this, Jonah, but watching mom while he was playing, like both during the dress rehearsal and the live show, she was like moving, she was like jumping up and down and moving her arms, truly like a teenager. It was so incredible. Oh,
I love that so much. I love that so much. My my mother attracts celebrities wherever she goes.
Really? Yeah.
It's crazy. Like wherever my parents would travel, they would meet somebody famous. They would be on like a little like day long, you know, boat trip. And Marion Ross, Mrs. Cunningham from Happy Days would be right next to him.
Oh, my God.
And of course, my mother would talk to them and, you know, whatever. She was really, really, she's good that way. So they also, when I lived in New York, they would visit a lot, and they would always go to 21, the 21 Club, sort of on, I think, 52nd Street, this like private sort of, it's not really private, everyone can get in, but like coat and tie kind of thing.
Okay.
Where Frank Sinatra was known to hang out, and they met him there once. My mom grew up worshiping.
Wow.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra was my mom's Paul McCartney. She went up and said hello. He said, thanks, babe. She never forgot it. Also, on like a later ski trip, one of my sisters-in-law borrowed my mom's ski coat because she didn't have one. And they went out to dinner and like they were like at the bar waiting for their table. And Phil Mickelson, the golfer, ended up right next to him. And they were like, it's a pheromone. She's got like, she literally emits something. And it's like, it's on the coat. And that's now there's a famous golfer right next to us. It's uncanny. It doesn't happen as much anymore because my mom is 89 and most of the celebrities that she knows are no longer with us. But it is, yeah, it's a real thing. It's a phenomenon.
I would think she probably met a lot of people through you too, right? But maybe was less interested.
She would not be as enthusiastic about a Jessica Simpson, probably.
Right, right, right. Our dad has this thing where he, and it's actually kind of uncanny, he will like spot someone when we're out somewhere in public and he'll be like, doesn't that person look like some celebrity? Yeah. And he actually is really good. Like it's actually pretty accurate. Really?
Yeah. Although I think it will be like one feature on the person. You'll be like that guy looks like Al Pacino. Like that guy looks nothing like Al Pacino. And then you're like, oh, this guy does have the same nose or something. Yeah. I feel like he's good at like spotting a singular feature.
We were in Cleveland in July and we went to Corky and Lenny's and the guy working at like the deli counter, who did he think he looked like? I can't remember, but it was like, once you looked at that guy, you were like, it's usually like one feature that you're like, that is incredibly similar.
He's good. He's observant.
He's observant.
Very observant. Very observant.
Was Snack Island or whatever, like teeming with celebrities?
Palm Island.
So I like Snack Island better, actually.
They should call it Snack Island.
We stayed, there were like these really nice condos we stayed in, or at least I thought they were nice because they were so full of great snacks. But there were these condos, but then there was a part of the island that we could walk to where there were actually like people who lived there who had like houses there that like had resident. Yeah, I don't know if you, I would go on a lot of walks with mom and dad. I guess you were off partying with Hunter or whatever.
I went to one party. I think I was like confused about it, but yeah, okay, go ahead.
Well, there would be like people who lived there and there was, because grandma would talk about it all the time, there was a famous tennis player, like a female tennis player who lived on the island or had a place there.
Okay.
There were some really nice houses, Jonah. If you would have taken a second to
You know what I remember? I remember playing, they had a pool table.
In the restaurant or something?
In the restaurant. And I was playing pool with my friends and some guy came over and was like, put $20 on tables. Like whoever wins this game can have $20. And to us, it was like putting down like $10,000. We like freaked out. And I was like, that is like a high roller move just to give $20 away to kids playing pool. I thought that guy, that was like so impressive.
That is super baller.
I didn't win, but I always had like infinite respect for that guy. Man.
Did that hurt? Were you had you spent the money in your head?
Probably.
In retrospect too, do you feel like a man who would go up to a table full of teens playing pool and say like $20 to the winner is maybe not someone you'd
in any other context necessarily want a grown man offering teenagers $20 is frowned upon.
I guess so. It's yeah. I don't think he stuck around to see who won. He didn't care. It was all about the gesture.
God, he was just throwing 20s wherever he went. He didn't even give a crap.
Care, man.
What a rich
royalty.
Guy.
Snack Island royalty.
Yeah. This guy is the richest guy on Snack Island. And he wants you to know. He doesn't want to stick around to wait for you to get it.
Dave, did you ever do any of the, speaking of Florida, any of the spring break stuff? Yeah. Or did you not have to do that?
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, definitely. That was always, it was mostly Cancun.
Okay.
I feel like, and then the beach houses moved around. So my first one was Seaside Heights, New Jersey. Elegant.
Wow. Which,
yeah, I mean, it really was super fun. I had never really been to the Jersey Shore. That is where the seed was planted for the eventual show, Jersey Shore, because of the people who would just come around the house.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. My first MTV show was there, and we shot it at a bar that was, like, we had the back room, but the bar would be open at 7 a.m., 365 days a year. So we'd show up at, like, 7 to set up, and there would be people there. And, you know, like, just morning bar people every day. It was truly glamorous and wild. Then it was Paradise Island in the Bahamas, the Isle of MTV. The like story for the viewer was that we took a boat down for Memorial Day weekend, but then Fred Durst blew it up with dynamite. So we were stranded on the island for the whole summer. And so like that, the Memorial Day weekend, it all like led up to a Limp Bizkit performance. And then he like did the plunger thing like Bugs Bunny, and this boat blew up and we were like, we're stuck on the Isle of MTV. Then I think it was San Diego and then Key West.
Wow.
I mean, do you think there's anything like that now? I mean, no, obviously there's still spring breaks, but like a cultural kind of phenomenon like that where it's like televised and it's like the destination.
No, I don't think there is one like shared experience for the youth anymore. There's like no one thing that you would definitely do or definitely turn on because it's on or whatever. Yeah, I can't think of like a big event like that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think from listening to Waiting for Impact, your podcast, which is
Thank
so
you.
Great. And from doing this podcast, it's like, you know, in the 90s and these times, like there was like, you didn't have as many options.
Right.
There was like the one thing and everyone was kind of a part of it. And that seems to have gone away in a lot of ways. There's so much more.
Yeah, it was a big thing and you either liked it or you didn't like it, but you knew about it and you had a reaction to it.
Yep.
And now it's like there are 10,000 things happening at any given time and I just don't know about them. There are big things that are happening that I just don't have an opinion on.
Yeah. Now, I don't mean to take things back, but I did have a quick question about spring break, which is, did you ever do any spring breaks with Pauly Shore?
He was always kind of around.
Okay.
Pauly Shore. He was a bit, he was a little like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused, right?
Okay. That's a really good.
So his heyday at MTV was like 92-ish, 91, 92-ish, right? And I started in 98. So the PAs, you know, the lower on the totem pole people who worked on his show were now the 28-year-olds who were the big executives.
Wow.
So he would come back and see them because they had, you know, the big offices and stuff like that. And he would, you know, that he would pitch things and sometimes they would buy them. And, you know, there was enough like live TV real estate on the channel that he could be like, oh, let me come on and, and do this thing. And they would sort of let him. And yeah, spring break, he would always just sort of pop by. He would just be there, whether he was on camera or not.
I mean, we could do a whole other episode on him, but my friend Jenny Binstock and a lot of my friends from home, when we hang out, we will watch, we haven't done it that many times, but we'll watch Encino Man. And it's just crazy that like, he would be in all these movies and he would just do, and everything. And at spring break, he would just do Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't necessarily match the environment around him or the movie he was in or whatever it was. I mean, Jonah, we've watched Son-in-Law so many times. But like it, because it was like him, it was almost like he could kind of come in and just be himself in any situation. And now like thinking back on like him being part of like the MTV stuff, people just loved him and he could just do whatever kind of he wanted that was Pauly Shore.
Sort of, yeah. I also remember.
Am I misremembering, David?
No, can tell me like that was his thing. He would just sort of show up and like do one of his three catchphrases and, you know, and then leave. And I remember also he was in the late 90s, he was trying to do like a documentary about his life or like a half scripted, half documentary type thing about his life. And I remember the title was You'll Never Wheeze in This Town Again. Which I was like, that's unfortunate. but he would be at certain like MTV events with his camera crew and then just like talk to people and get footage and whatever. And he talked to my mom. And I was not privy to that conversation, but he was like, he came up to me later and he was like, is it okay if I use this conversation with your mom in my documentary? And I'm sure I was drunk and said yes. And then I was like, I am not going to have my mother like used for comedy in a Pauly Shore documentary. I don't know what the context is, but I was like, I didn't know him well enough to know whether I could trust him.
Yes.
With my mother's brand. You know what I mean? So,
yes.
So I did ask like the 28-year-old, you know, high up executive,
yes.
Like, could you just not? And I don't know whether the documentary ever came out. I think a documentary did, but I don't think my mom is in it.
We will find out and we will
get
back
cool.
to
that'd
you.
Okay, cool. That'd be great. Because I don't know
whether this documentary came out.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I have a feeling Jonah and I are going to be wasting many hours this weekend looking into
this. Okay, great. Yeah, definitely. Let me know what you find out.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we will be right back with Dave Holmes.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with Dave Holmes. Now, Dave.
Vanessa and I have some breaking news.
Oh, no.
About another MTV DJ.
God. We do. This is incredible. And I wonder if you know him.
You might know him. We found out that we are distantly related.
Not that distantly.
Not that distant. We are related.
We're like second cousins once removed.
And this was a rumor we heard growing up from our grandma. I never thought it was actually true. And we got confirmation from him. And we're going to have him on the podcast moving forward. Ricky Rackman.
No way!
He's our cousin.
Yeah,
he's our cousin.
Wow!
So our great uncle... by yes. marriage. His sister is Ricky Rackman's grandma.
Okay.
So we're pretty closely related. And we remember our great aunt, like, kind of saying that Ricky Rackman was our cousin. And Jonah remembers her talking about his tattoos a lot.
I think the adjective she used was disgusting. Okay. She's like, he's got these disgusting tattoos. He's this, you know, they were traditional kind of,
Repel a great aunt, those tattoos, that's for sure.
Yes.
I remember her being like, his tattoos are disgusting, but his sister is very successful.
Okay.
And like, he was very, you know, and Jonah and I would watch Headbangers Ball and be like, Jonah was so into, I mean, I was kind of watching because Jonah was watching it, but more his style of music. But we'd be like, is that our cousin?
Oh,
you know, and now we know.
So you know what's so weird about it? I've wondered this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then Vanessa just messaged him on Instagram.
We were talking about it. Yeah, on the podcast or something. And I just messaged, I was like, I should just message him on Instagram and be like, I think my brother and I think we might be your cousins. Like, can, like, and so I named the name of our great aunt, like her full name. And he was like, her last name is the name of my grandmother's maiden name.
Okay.
And he was like, I remember my cousins, Eric and Nina. And I was like, our dad and Ricky Rackman share first cousins.
One of my favorite memories from beginning to work at MTV was like the first time I got recognized by a taxi driver. He was a big Headbangers Ball guy. And I met Ricky Rackman many times in the years that would follow. But yeah, and they never brought back Headbangers Ball, I don't think. Did they?
Not in the same way, for sure. I mean, but so interesting because you hosted 120 Minutes, which I feel like was like also running a parallel line of the culture.
Right.
And I think that's a great way to kind of segue into our topic, sure, which is the radio, which sounds like a very broad topic, but listeners deal with it, right?
Because it is like a thing that was the organizing principle of my life growing up. And like my teenage nieces and nephews, I don't think would ever turn it on, ever. And I don't hear it anymore.
Yes.
Except for like in a lift. Yeah. I never
exactly
hear. I live in Los Angeles. I've been here 18 years. I don't know what the stations are. I have KCRW in the morning sometimes. And then there's a ton of other radio stations and I don't know what they are or what they play, except like maybe K-Rock. I know I can turn on K-Rock and hear Santeria immediately.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't know, like, I don't know what Top 40 radio is anymore. I don't know anything about it. It's weird.
Yeah. So that's something I'm really curious about. So first of all, just in case someone wants to leave a comment, we know the radio still exists,
sure,
but not in the same way.
And if you're a kid, you don't interact with it in the same way.
Right.
You're not like, right, you know, I'm a 98.5 person. You know what I mean? You don't like define yourself by the station you listen to, I don't think.
And what I find so interesting, you made the Santeria reference, which I think is so accurate. And I think what I think is so strange about rock radio is that it's the same songs now that it was in the night. I mean, you turn it on, it's like Lithium by Nirvana, Plush by Stone Temple Pilots, Rooster by Alice in Chains. It's like, do you know why it's the same songs? Like, it seems stuck there.
Because it's such, like, it's a business, like, terrestrial radio. So, like, the radio that's, you know, that with the dial that's in your car before you turn over to satellite radio is, like, that is a business that is a little bit fading out, just a little bit. I'm aware that this is an iHeartRadio podcast. But it's going away, and, like, the people who are left in it are like fighting for scraps. So you can't, like, the idea of playing a song that is like not super familiar to the listener, or that is like challenging in some way that might make one person change the channel, is like, that could be the difference between, you know, succeeding and failing in the radio business. So it's like, you sort of have to keep people just satisfied. Maybe not super happy, but just satisfied. It's very strange. And it's also like, okay, so one of the big stations in St. Louis where I grew up was KSHE-95, which was like a classic rock station. And, you know, from 1977 to now, it's the same playlist. It's Led Zeppelin and it's the Rolling Stones and it's, you know, Fog Hat and all, you know, Kansas and all that stuff. And it has not changed. Like, they might throw in a Bon Jovi song now, or like maybe Pearl Jam or something like that. But it's basically frozen, like frozen in amber. And like all the jocks and the cool kids and stuff listened to KSHE-95 and just, you know, had a favorite fucking Grand Funk Railroad song or whatever. But then like around 83, 84, there was a station called KYMC, which was like sort of a college station, but like it was just this weird little shack with a radio tower. And it had like, it broadcast for like a 3 mile radius. And it would play like The Replacements and The Cure and stuff like that. And I lived within that 3 mile radius and I listened to it and I was like, this is my future. I fucking love it. And I like, when I was 15, I rode my bike there and like applied for a job and got it. And so I had like a Saturday afternoon radio show for all the rest of high school, which was wild.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was so much fun. It didn't get paid, but it was like, I don't care. In fact, I think I had to pay like $20 a month or something. There were like dues, but it didn't matter. It was like, it was heaven. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what goes on in our house now is when like my partner and I are home and we're having like guests over, we will put, there's an iHeartRadio station that is all old Casey Kasem American Top 40 shows from the 70s and 80s. It's called Classic American Top 40. And we put it on and it's Casey Kasem counting down the top 40 from sometime in the 70s or 80s. And it is so comforting and like, and it brings back such good memories. And there are maybe 70-ish shows in rotation and we have heard them all at least three times.
Wow.
To the point where it's like, let's not leave yet because there's a really good long distance dedication coming up or whatever. Like we kind of, we've gotten to know it almost too well. And like our friends now know it almost too well, but it is exactly the kind of comfort and nostalgia that has allowed us to survive the COVID era. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
I will definitely listen to it. I mean, the thing is like, you're right. Like kind of what you're saying, it's like we used to all sort of like organize our days around Absolutely. The radio. I mean, and so it is so nostalgic. Like I remember getting ready for school in the morning. I had like a clock alarm radio mm-hmm. thing that like would wake me up and then I would listen to like some morning show or whatever. And then sometimes at night I'd listen to the radio. And then when Jonah and I were talking about like when our dad would drive us to Temple on Sunday mm-hmm. mornings to like synagogue, we would listen to Casey Kasem and we would stop and get, Jonah doesn't remember this, of course, but we would stop at Burger King and get the breakfast platter, which was like hash browns, eggs. They have one now. We looked it up. They have one now that has pancakes. Ours does not have pancakes, but it's hash browns, eggs, I think.
Sausage or something.
Sausage.
A standard breakfast.
And like it was, and a biscuit maybe. It was so good. And we would like, I would finish it just as we would get to Temple and I'd be like, oh, I'd rather sit in the car and eat this thing. But no, but it was fine. Oh. But it was like, we'd listen to Casey Kasem on the way to that. We would like, it just felt also like the way you organize, like I remember listening to like nighttime shows in my room and like just the way that your whole day was organized was around these shows.
Yeah.
That was like how you felt included in the world.
It gave you inclusion. Yeah, totally. Us too. Like going to Catholic Mass on Sunday mornings, I would get up early. If the weather was nice, I would roller skate in my driveway and listen to like numbers 40 through like, you know, 28. Then get in the shower, get ready for Mass, and we would drive to Mass and listen to like, you know, songs 25 to or 15 to 10. And then Mass was like during 10 to 1, and it was like, I knew those songs well enough that I didn't really need to hear them.
But yeah,
sometimes we'd be back in the car by the time number one was revealed or whatever. And then we would go to the International House of Pancakes, and we would have a full brunch.
That's so nice.
It was delightful. Yeah, and then, you know, weeknights, usually there would be like the hot five at nine or something on like the top 40 station. It'd be like the most requested songs of the day. And then later there would be like every top 40 station had something like Smash It or Trash It or like.
Totally.
They'd play a new song and the like listeners would call in because you had to call in and vote on whether they should play it or never play it again. That was the first time I ever heard Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge was on like Smash or Trash.
I was literally just listening to that song the other day and I don't.
I keep thinking about the movie Airheads.
Oh, I don't think I ever saw that.
You didn't? It's about a radio station.
It's about a radio station and it's like there's a Lemmy cameo in it.
Great.
It's Adam Sandler, Chris Farley is the policeman, right?
Yeah. And they like they're in this rock band and they want to bring their song to the studio and then they end up like.
They hold the radio station hostage.
Okay, they hold it hostage. You got to see it.
I remember that it existed.
Michael Richards is in it. It's like a very 90s Great. Cast.
But I was going to say, too, at night there was like Loveline and stuff like that, too, where it was like, that's kind of like, because we didn't have like the TV that we have now, maybe, that it's like, there was stuff like that you could listen to, too, that felt like so crazy that was like on the radio, where people would like call in with like sex questions. Yeah. And I remember listening to that stuff and being like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah, totally. All of that shit was so super important. And like the shows that you listened to and the stations that you listened to were like part of your identity. Like in high school, it was either you were like a classic rock kid or you were an alternative kid or you were like real into Dungeons and Dragons and you liked Rush, you know, or Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Right.
And it was like the music that you listened to and the radio station that brought it to you were like organizing principles in your identity.
Yes.
Which
yes,
does not
totally
exist anymore. Like I
no.
And like I ask, you know, I have nieces and nephews who were like from 16 to 31-ish. And the younger ones, I'm constantly asking, like, do you listen to the radio? Which seems like a really weird and basic question that an old man would ask a young person. And they kind of largely don't. Like, I guess some of them have it in the car or whatever, but like mostly they don't. They'll just plug in, you know, the iPhone, or they'll go on satellite,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, they don't know the radio stations of St. Louis any better than I know the ones of LA.
I have to say, you know, now that I moved to LA a few years ago, two or three years ago, I don't even really, but I moved here and I got a car, and it was the first time I've been driving since I was in high school. And one of my favorite things about driving is that I can listen to the radio, and I have all these radio stations like programmed in my car. And I have to say, I have this thing that I kind of had when I was in high school, which is I was never a person who like listened to like CDs or tapes in the car, because somehow, and I think I've already said this, but listening to the radio makes me feel so much more connected to the world in a way that like when I listen to CDs, it feels so isolating in the car. Yeah. Like, so I always have done that. And I truly love listening to the radio so much. And it was thinking about what we were talking about too. It's interesting that now there is like Sirius Radio where you can control, like, are you listening to like Lithium, which is like the 90s stuff, or they are like digital, but they're like mimicking
it's
a lot of the nostalgic stuff in a way that's so crazy, because that is not regular radio. I don't know. It's all crazy.
Yeah, it's very strange. I do like weekends on the Spectrum on Sirius XM, which is like the, you know, it's where you go for your Mumford and Sons and Hozier and, you know, things of that nature. And I like it. But all of Sirius XM is run by old white guys who came up in regular terrestrial radio. So, so everything is very much like, it's programmed so narrowly that like you will never be surprised by anything. And I don't get that, because if you, and I know I'm shitting on my employer, but whatever. If on the Spectrum, for example, I were to play something new that might like set a listener's teeth on edge and they change the channel, they would change the channel to another Sirius station. They wouldn't just be like, I'm canceling my whole subscription.
Right.
And all 300 of these channels are garbage to me now. What I listen to in the morning now is BBC Radio 6, which I cannot recommend highly enough. It is, it's like totally freeform. When it's morning here, it's evening there. So I'm listening to their like drive time evening show. And it's like, you can tell that there's a human mind at work. So they'll play something like, they'll play, you know, the Strokes, and then they'll play something like brand new from one of these like new British bands where it's like post-punk music and a woman just saying things. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there are like 18 bands that are like that right now, like Wet Leg and whatever. It's all over the place, and they take calls, and it's just like, you feel like there's a human mind organizing it. Whereas, you know, I listen to most other things and it's like, it's all done by computer program, and the objective is just for nobody to ever change the channel.
That's so crazy.
Right, right.
I was also, okay, so there was Casey Kasem, which of course, he's
of course
a god among men. The way that he, like in retrospect, the care and the respect that he gives each artist, no matter how ephemeral and or how, you know, like living in a box, or like he treats them the way that you would treat the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
Everything is just like he's got this enthusiasm. He will lay into a long song title. That's Tears for Fears, and everybody wants to rule the world. Like he gives it a narrative arc. It's like, it is so, like, nobody does that now. Now you, like, I think Ryan Seacrest is doing American Top 40.
His version.
And it's just, everything is about, you know, how he's friends with every artist and, you know, whatever. I was just talking to, you know, Olivia Rodrigo, and here's what she said. And it's like, cool, she's a child and you're an adult. That's weird that you're friends.
Okay, a little bit of tension there.
It's always weird to me when like adults are like, hey, I was just at this kid's thing. And it's like, cool, you're talking about a 14-year-old, but cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just very, It's very odd. Like the thing has changed. But anyway, so Casey Kasem, I grew up loving. But then, okay, so then there was like a second tier of syndicated radio shows. And I'm just going to run them past you and see if you remember them.
Okay.
Please.
John Garabedian's Open House Party.
No, don't remember that one.
Two listeners are losing their minds right now.
Okay. There's one that just came to my mind. I wonder if you'll say
it. What was it?
Rick Dees in the Weekly Top 40.
Well, sure. Yes. There was that. Yeah. Yeah,
I just remember, honestly, him saying Rick, the thing that was like, Rick Dees,
the Weekly Top 40.
Beautiful, Dave.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's another thing like that I want to investigate fully is like the recording sessions where, you know, five people would get into a recording studio and be like, number 36. Like, what is that? What was that gig? How much did it pay?
Do you remember the Annie movie? Annie, where like they were recording the radio. And it's like those women singing. I'm remembering this. I watched Annie so much as a kid. Also, yeah. I had short curly hair and people said I looked a lot like her. But I can't remember. I mean, this is when I'm like 3, 4. Uh-huh. But so I can't remember. But don't they sing? And like, don't they have like women singing on the radio?
So, yeah. Yeah. What's the song? Shit. Is it You're Never Fully Dressed Without
it
a Smile?
It might be Never Fully Dressed Without a Smile, which is a song that I auditioned with quite a lot in Stagecrafters in middle school.
Mine was Gary Indiana from The Music Man.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it looks like it worked for both of us.
It absolutely did. But you know what? It's the long game.
Yeah, we were playing the long game. We might not have gotten, you know, the leading role, but guess what?
Yeah.
Here we
are.
Where
are they?
On a podcast, so everybody can forget it.
Yeah, I'm in Studio City,
eat
motherfuckers.
Eat the crow, you guys.
That's right.
Eat the crow. Right. I know it's the it was extra, but...
Mm-hmm. Eat the crow. Eat all the crow.
Eat every little piece of crow.
Mm-hmm. Don't leave one bit. There's starving kids. Okay. Joel Denver's Future Hits.
No, I don't remember any of these for some reason.
Oh my God. Sunday nights. Well, I guess it was syndicated, so it would just be whenever. But in St. Louis, it was Sunday nights. And it was late-ish, maybe 10 or 11. And it was an hour of just the newest songs, right? And it was based on Radio and Records, which is like a trade publication. And so it would be like he would play like songs that magazine felt would be hits. And then he would play the top five songs in the UK, which was a big deal for me because I wanted to be British really badly. And then
sounds like
the
you still
last
do. You listen to the BBC.
I do. Yeah, I'm super. Kidding, yeah, I would really no. It's 100%. I would much rather be British, and I will live abroad at some point in my life. I don't know when.
I'm sure you will.
Maybe soon. Maybe soon. We'll see how things shake out in the next 2 to 4 years. But and then the last three were the new Mariah Carey song or, you know,
got
Wilson
it, got
Phillips.
It, got it.
Things that were just like there was no possible way that they could fail. I needed to be fresh with the new pop music.
Yes.
So I would never, ever miss that. But you guys don't remember. I don't know how long it lasted.
Did you ever listen to the Casey Kasem where he had that meltdown and like starts swearing?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. And you know what? I've actually, one of the ones that's in rotation is the show that is definitely from.
Really?
Yes. Because it is a long distance dedication about a dog that died and they play whatever sad song. And then it goes immediately into like Jump for My Love or something. And it is jarring. It's jarring. Like the transition, even Casey himself, like cannot make it super smooth.
What is it? He's like, what is this? Like there's a dedication to a dog or something?
Yeah. You can't put a peppy song next to a damn dead dog. he's furious and rightfully so. Yeah. But like the first time we heard that one, I was like, hold on, is that? And then the second time around, I was like, you guys, listen, I think this is the one. Like, oh, I think this is during this break, he has that meltdown. Anyway. Yeah.
Incredible.
We will never see the likes of Casey Kasem again.
No, although, you know, I actually didn't realize there was this classic Casey Kasem station. And I heard him in the car the other day with my wife. And I was like, I thought it was new. I was like, is this a new Casey Kasem? And I was like, I don't think he's still around, but it sounds like.
He's long gone.
Yeah. I had to look it up.
Yeah. He's not only dead, I think his kids and his second wife are maybe still fighting about who gets his remains.
Yeah, I was looking into it. It seems very complicated, his whole situation with that stuff.
Well,
It is. Did you guys just see me splash water on my own face? Because that just happened. Had a little sip of water. There was splashing within the bottle. It came back up. I splashed water on my own face while drinking it.
Well, if our listeners want to splash a little water on their face, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, and we're back. And now, Dave, we're going to play a little game with you that we like to call Back to the Present.
Joan and Vanessa, we've got to go back to the present!
The name's obviously a hilarious take on the nostalgic Back to the Future franchise.
Oh, I get it. I get it.
And in this segment, we each get to say something from our childhood we wish would come back. And so to give you a little time to think, we're going to go first.
Okay.
And we just want you to remember there are no wrong answers. And whatever you say, our producers will try to research it really quickly so they can give you some data on it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go first, and mine is kind of general. The thing that I wish would come back to the present is 17 magazine and like teen magazines in general. I was really into teen magazines when I was growing up, and I used to get this magazine called Apostrophe Teen. And Teen magazine is the one that had the great model search, which Tiffany Amber Thiessen won. Denise Richards won it.
Wow.
It started their careers. And it was just like this teen magazine. Probably in retrospect, if I read one of the magazines now, I'd go like, well, maybe not so great for girls, but in terms of like self-esteem stuff. But also like I loved the magazine so much. I love 17 magazine. And I was telling Jonah that there was this article in 17 magazine. I didn't get, so I got Teen magazine, but I would like one off buy 17 magazines. Mm-hmm. And there was this article in one of them about this girl picking out her outfit for the first day of school. And it was like, she like wore a dress with like boots. She was like trying to figure out like, what's my look going to be this year as I go back to school. And mm-hmm. I remember every year I kept the magazine every year before I would go back to school. I would read this article and it would like help me plan my outfit. Cause I don't know if you remember this, you guys, but to me, what I would wear for the first day of school back was such a big deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It felt so defining of like who I'm going to be this school year.
So can you talk us through an outfit? Sophomore year, let's say sophomore year.
I think by then I had probably gotten rid of the magazine, but I had it all throughout like middle school and everything. I think it was a lot of Doc Martens, which was an inspiration from Jonah. Mm-hmm. Jonah had Doc Martens that like laced up. Then I got Doc Martens to copy him.
Yeah.
And like, kind of like, I don't know, like maybe even Doc Martens in a dress, which Ooh. Because this girl wore it in the article. So that to me, it was just about being kind of like girly, but also kind of edgy.
Yeah.
And that's how I would something. Describe myself to this sure. day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very edgy.
Very edgy, but kind of girly. And here's yeah. the other thing I want to say about Teen Mag. Now, so I want to say about Teen magazines and all, I'm looking it up. All of these magazines kind of don't exist anymore, which is really sad. We were able to read and rent YM magazine from our Brady Middle School library.
Oh, wow.
And that was the coolest thing in the world, because if you'll remember, which probably both of you don't, YM magazine had this section called Say Anything, where, do you remember this, Dave?
I do remember it. Yeah.
And where the readers would write in like the most embarrassing moment. It would be like, I was talking about my crush and I turned around and he was standing behind me.
Oh, no. Well, you know,
obviously, why me?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so these magazines were like so not only was it like how to get your hair straight or whatever, but it was also like, you know, embarrassing moments and like, here's how I feel about like the environment. It was, I mean, there was like a lot of really good content
in these
magazines. And I was sad to hear that like, you know, 17 magazine in like 2018 went down from like 10 issues a year to like six. And now it's like, there is no 17 magazine. It's like they have special standalone episodes once in a while. YM ceased publication in 2004.
Yeah.
If you go to the YM website, you get immediately taken to Teen Vogue, which I'm like, the idea of that does not, it does not feel the same. It doesn't feel as like kind of free and like alternative or something. And anyways, I miss teen magazines so much.
I'm right there with you. And I love that you call issues episodes, because so do I. I always make that mistake. Yeah, we're closing our winter episode right now at Esquire. And I got to know teen girl magazines through like doing musicals in high school. Because,
the
girls, because I went to an all boys school and we had a dress code. So that thing of like how you were going to dress that first day was sort of, that was a decision that was taken out of your hands, because you had to wear a tie and a button down and all that kind of thing. And, but then like at rehearsals, the girls would bring in their magazines and we would read them. And it was like, there's nothing like this for boys at all.
Yeah. I guess that's,
it was like fashiony, but also like kind of service-y in a way. And like, boys don't get that kind of thing. And I always wish that we had.
They were really, I mean, the Say Anything, a lot of it was like really interesting, stuff.
Sassy was
great.
Yeah.
Sassy was like more edgy. Sassy was even cooler. I remember this is, and then I'll stop talking about teen magazines, but I remember this one article about this girl who was like, people are mean to me because I'm so pretty. She was like, girls have always been kind of like combative with me. And I'm sure it was true. And I remember reading it at my friend Lissy Billfield's house. and being like, this is kind of our problem too. Like, I do feel like sometimes people are mean to us.
Yeah. Because they're jealous.
Meanwhile, I think that might have been the case with Lissy, but it wasn't really the case with me. And I'm not saying that I wasn't pretty. I just don't think I was getting a lot of people, you know, lashing out at me because of my beauty.
You don't know that.
I mean, people were pretty nice to me, but it was kind of like reverse psychology, I think, because they like wanted
that's probably
to be
it.
Mean.
But yeah, that's probably it. Yeah.
Anyways.
I remember there was a story in Sassy in like the maybe like mid-80s that was like, my brother's gay. So what?
Incredible.
That at that time was just like, I don't even think I read the article. I just saw the blurb on the cover and was like, yeah. That is comforting. Like, that's cool. There are like cool people in the world who aren't going to lose their shit when I eventually come out of the closet. You know?
Yeah.
That means something.
Those magazines really often did. Again, the one that I got when I was younger, Teen Magazine, probably did this the least, but those magazines, 17, YM, Sassy, they really did like address a lot of really interesting stuff. And they talked to the readers / viewers like they were real people,
yeah.
Which is incredible.
That's a great one, Vanessa. Dave, I'm gonna lay mine on you. I hope you relate to it as much as you did. Vanessa's, if you do, I will be amazed and have a whole new respect for you. Mine are a snack food.
Yeah, Jonah wishes a snack food would come up, would come back that's very specific.
Yeah, so this is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pudding pies. Are you
talk
familiar with these,
it.
Dave?
Not at all.
They were these green. Do you know how Hostess has those fruit pies that you always get at the gas station?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they used to make them with pudding, chocolate, and I think vanilla pudding. And then when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were really big, which I'm trying to remember, I think like these were discontinued in 1987. So this was, you know, a while ago.
Yeah.
I guess in the mid 80s, they had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one that was green. That came with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stickers. I think this was like the heyday of the cartoon. I think this was even pre-film. And they were deep fried pies dyed green with vanilla pudding inside.
For ooze.
And according to some of the research I've done, there were 500 calories. They had 50 grams of sugar.
Ooh,
I mean, they were probably like the most unhealthy thing you could eat. But I remember they had them at our middle
25
school.
25 grams of fat.
25 grams
wow!
of fat. And yeah. I mean, and these things were, I was so into them.
They did have them in our middle
yes.
school?
Yes. That's how our parents would never buy something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember eating them in middle school. I remember we had like a snack bar with like those and like Little Debbie zebra cakes. And hose and stuff. And I remember, I think they had to get rid of it because kids were just stealing stuff. Because we were like, yeah, we're just kids and there's all these snacks. We're just going to like take them. Like, we don't really understand right and wrong. I remember, well, maybe some of us did more than others, but I think I paid for mine most of the time, I hope. But yeah, I looked it up and these things are actually go for like hundreds of dollars now on eBay just for
the wrappers.
Someone's selling a wrapper for $250. There's these Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle YouTube pages where people are recreating them. They're like, I made it. These like huge green pies with vanilla pudding inside. They discontinued the whole pudding pie line as well as the Ninja Turtles. So they don't even make any of these. And I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pies? Have you had anything like these?
I can't speak to the Ninja Turtle part of the experience, but the pudding pie and the pudding pop were both big parts of my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved a Jell-O pudding pop.
Oh yeah.
I loved it all. I loved a pudding cup. I loved a pudding parfait at KFC. I do. I miss it terribly, but I don't remember the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. The Ninja Turtles ones, people really online, there's so many people trying to recreate them. They seem like they're like a lot of work to recreate. And there's a lot of people, it seems like online, who are really trying to bring them back in a way that feels, we've covered it before, like people miss those snacks and they feel really like they've got a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah. But you know, certainly the long-term health effects of those pies are still being felt to this day. So there's comfort in that.
In some ways, they'll always be with those people.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird how, like, there was no, I feel like nutrition was so different then too, not to get too much on a tangent, but I felt like no one was like, this seems like a lot of fat and calories for like a little snack. I thought everyone was like, yeah, they're green. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. Right. They almost, the outside of them almost look like green sparkly. Like it was pretty, almost in the way that those snowballs, like those Hostess snowballs were like kind of sparkly looking. They were like that, but green and maybe, so.
I wanted to like a snowball so bad, but there's coconut involved in that, right?
Yeah, there is coconut. Nope, can't do it. I was into the snowballs. I wasn't actually as into chocolate, but I liked coconut.
Yeah, you liked the Hostess pies that were like, you know,
they were always in some crazy fluorescent kind of color.
Yeah.
Sure.
And came in that paper.
Yeah. I liked a Hostess Ding Dong. And then I went away to college in Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, they're called King Don.
Really?
And I was like, what else is true in this new world that I have entered? Like, they're King Don's. Or they were King Don's.
King Don's.
Wow. I live in Massachusetts and I didn't know that. But I guess we haven't. Yeah, we haven't.
I don't know. Maybe
it's possible.
They've standardized it by now, but at the time they were King Don's.
Very strange.
Wow.
But yeah, so I don't know if these will come back. Like Vanessa said, there's a couple petitions online about it. People are making them at home, but I don't know. I tried to read like the Hostess CEO's last earnings report statement, and he just was using all these kind of businessy terms I didn't understand, but I didn't say anything about the TMNT. Yeah.
I get it, but I think, you know, if there's anything that the listener can take away from this episode, it's you know, be patient and you know, it's not, these games are not won or lost in a single day or a single year. Play the long game.
Exactly.
Be patient. It will eventually, things are cyclical and it will come back.
It's true. I mean, and I think the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did kind of, they've already had like a second, third life.
So. Many probably, lives. They've probably. Come back many times.
So probably. Maybe next time we'll have this
with the pudding pie tie-in. Yeah.
They, like so many things, are one of those cultural moments that happened like a year after I was the target audience.
Yeah.
And so I didn't engage with it because I was like 14 and that was for 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like I didn't see the Goonies until like maybe 4 years ago because that came out when I was 13 and it felt like it was for 12-year-olds. And I was like, I can't get on board. And like, there was all this, like, my generation didn't really have a whole lot of, like, cartoons and stuff that were for us. We had, like, Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry and all these things where it was, like, World War II jokes and Edward G. Robinson impressions and shit that was, like, referencing stuff that I was, like, we don't know what it is, but we don't care. We'll just pretend to, I can probably do an Edward G. Robinson impression based on Bugs Bunny, but I've never seen Edward G. Robinson in a movie.
Sure.
And then, like, then I turned 13 and suddenly for 12-year-olds, there was like Voltron and He-Man and all of that stuff. But it was, I was always just like a little too old. Like Nickelodeon happened when I was 12 and I was like, that's for 10-year-olds. I can't watch it.
Yeah.
Right.
So like, it's very strange. All of these youth things happened like 5 minutes after I aged out.
Wow. That's like the way for it goes. Me, that was like One Tree Hill for me.
Really?
I missed it by a couple years.
Have you, now would you go back and...
Oh, I have.
It?
I've watched it, you know, repeats. But
okay.
One Tree, So, anyways, what are you going to do? You missed that. You missed basically everything. I missed One Tree Hill.
I guess. I've been wanting to do that with Dawson's Creek. I always felt like I would like
Dawson's Creek. Same. I was going to say Dawson's Creek, although Jonah watched it. You watched it in college.
I watched it in college. I felt like it was actually like a social act. When I met my friend Bruce, I felt like some kids were like, we're going to go watch Dawson's Creek at our dorm room. And we were like, do you want to come? We're like, okay. And I think we watched like a couple episodes. I think we were like,
I feel like you watched more than that, but
maybe I think I was on like the tail end where I felt like I was like, I think I'm too old to be watching this, but it's like kind of ironic, but I'm also a teenager. So it's not fully ironic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now Dave.
Yes.
What if you could choose something to bring back to the present, what would it be?
I have a couple things.
Okay.
One is, and I floated this as the thing to remember in this episode. And
yes.
And Jonah very correctly pointed out that there's not enough in it to sustain a whole show. But commercials body sprays and fragrances where women are just slapping things all over themselves.
Yes.
Like Jean Nate or Impulse.
Yes.
Or Wind Song or whatever. It's a woman in a shower and she's just going, psh.
Doesn't it go like this? Your wind song stays on my mind.
That's exactly how it goes. I can't seem to forget you. Your wind song stays on my mind. And the Jean Nate one was just Jean Nate, Jean Nate. And there was like a woman on a horse. And then she goes to the shower and she splashes Jean Nate all over herself real violently. I missed that.
Do you remember the exclamation where it's like, exclamation, make a statement without saying a word? It was more an artistic commercial and less of a like woman putting a ton of, do you remember the one for Ambiance where it's a woman who gets on a motorcycle and she goes, I manage a job, I work 9 to 5. We'll do what we can to survive, but I'm going to have an ambiance night. Do you remember that? And she gets on a motorcycle.
I mean, it slightly rings a bell, but I like your version better. Thank you. Another one is Anjali. I can bring home the bacon. Anjali, fry it up in a pan. Anjali. There was that. There was a lot of like aspirational, you know, adult sexy splashes. And I missed those.
The one that was really marketed towards teens, because I remember our cousin Mia used to wear it and it was like really cool, was I think she wore it, was Baby Soft, but I don't remember the commercials for it. But that was like the kind of body spray. Loves Baby Soft was like kind of the one for teens. Those body sprays in general, do they even still exist? Like a Baby Soft or a Winsome?
I don't know. I'd have to go to Walgreens and check it all out. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Is now Gwyneth Paltrow doing an elevated version of that on Goop? Is there some like $50 a bottle version of that now?
Well, you know, that is the thing, is like there's so much more stuff now. Even like we were talking about, there's just everywhere. Like we used to have such limited options in every area of our lives in a way that was so great.
Yeah.
In a way, because it kept things a little less, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I hope that Baby Soft and I hope that Ambiance still exists.
Yeah. I want those. I want kids to have that experience now. But I think the thing I want back actually most of all is all my children.
Speaking my language.
Because I fucking loved it. Even when I didn't watch it, I would check in once a month, see what was going on. It was very easy to follow. That was a massive part of my youth. And soap operas in general, I'm sure there are soap operas on the air now, but it just seems...
Literally was saying yesterday to someone that Jonah, I don't know if you remember this, but you and I used to watch All My Children.
Okay, so what years?
I remember.
I mean, I feel like we would watch it when we were visiting our grandparents in Philadelphia and stuff. Like, it would be random that we would watch it.
I would say the 90s.
Do you remember characters?
Maybe late 80s.
Story arcs?
I remember. Was that the one where they were like, two old guys who were twins or something?
Adam and Stewart.
Or there was like,
Adam
and Stewart.
Yeah.
Yes.
Adam was an angry businessman. And, you know, all of his children, like they did the same story arc over and over for all his children where they would get sober because the kids would go crazy. Okay.
Obviously, Erica.
Of course, Erica. But yeah, Adam he was on the show for like a full year before you found out that he had a twin brother locked in the attic, who was like mentally challenged. But then that character, like his mental challenge was literally just that he would wear an Argyle sweater and one of his shirt lapels would be out. And he was nice. Like he saw the good in people. So that is the way in which he was like mentally challenged. He could probably drive a car and pay bills, but he was just like, he couldn't get his shirt collar together.
Were they ever on screen together or no?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They would do
a very clunky split screen.
Okay.
That actor definitely died, and maybe one or the other of the characters died, but the other stayed on. I don't know. But yes, of course, Erica.
Wasn't Sarah Michelle Gellar her daughter?
The daughter that we never knew that she had.
Right.
Because she was on the show from the very first episode. So they like retconned this whole thing like 30 years into the show, that she had this like teenage daughter before the show ever started 30 years ago. And it was Sarah Michelle Gellar as Kendall, troublemaker.
And then she had a different daughter later who was a lesbian, right?
She had Bianca. Now Bianca was born like late 80s, something like that. And was a baby and then was 5 and then was 18.
100% they grew up.
Within like 18 months.
Well, Dave, we are definitely going to have you back on because what a trove. And
it feels as though we're just getting started.
It feels as though we're just getting started. We have to do this again.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And where can listeners find you? You have a couple podcasts.
I do. Yeah. Waiting for Impact. A Dave Holmes Passion Project is out now. It's 10 episodes. We're about 5 in now. It's a pop culture mystery that we're finally solving after decades.
Well, check it out. And thank you so much, Dave,
for being here. My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
And everybody, if you enjoyed listening to this, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Do We Get Weird? Well, we'll discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural milestones, like the radio.
Or soap operas.
Or soap operas. Or teen magazines. Or so many things that we've discussed today.
Or ambiance nights.
I'm gonna have an ambiance night.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.